All right, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Rachel, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome, everybody, to the Monday night Believe Chip Speakers Meeting at NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, we have Sam C., who is a close personal friend of mine as a result of sitting in probably nearly 1,000 meetings together. We see each other at his home group in Oakwood at the Fourth Dimension on Friday nights. I'm usually here on Monday. He gave up his Monday night to come down tonight. And he's on the board at the Serenity House of Buford, very active at the Serenity House there. And every Sunday morning in Gainesville at the Classic meeting at 9 a.m. He's just a real gentleman, and he goes to any length, and I like to think that I'm modeling my sobriety after Sam. I'm glad that people like Sam came before me. He's been around since 1978, and before he gets any older, I'm going to have him come up.
Goodness. Now, I got to say something nice about you, I guess.
No, no, no. That's you, what, you get right down to
that's going to be hard to do. I know y'all came looking for a miracle, but I'm not it, okay? And you're probably wondering, what the hell is he going to talk about? Don't worry, I don't know either. We're in the same boat, okay? It's true, Tim, and I, by the way, I'm Sam, and I am an alcoholic. And I've been on the trail of Alcoholics Anonymous since February 21, 1978. Can y'all hit me back there on the back? I don't see anybody asleep yet. I'll give you about 5 minutes and go ahead. Tim is really true. I tell you, I rode across many, many times during my course of sobriety in Gainesville, Georgia. And I'll get to that in a minute, but I wanted to really tell y'all what you've got here. You've got a diamond in the rough. Tim became my kind of like spiritual advisor when I came down with cancer 8 years ago. And I knew Tim had had a terrible time with it. He was the first voice I contacted to solicit his advice on how to deal with it. Calm, collected, he knew what to eat. I started, he knew what to wear, but actually, I had to help him with what to wear. But just the idea of, you know, taking the different foods and making sure that we did the right thing during the treatments. So that worked out really good, and I've been cancer-free for almost 3 years now. So that's worked out really good. Good doctors, good medicine, good attitude really helps, I think. So, but anyhow, I see a lot of newcomers in the crowd. How many young people do we have less than a year sobriety? Okay. How many are in treatment facilities? Okay. I don't ask that question to embarrass you. I ask that question because I've been a player in the treatment facilities for years and years. I have a grandson now in treatment down in South Georgia. I have a son that's been in this program for 36 years. So I can tell you from experience, it's a family illness. It takes families working together, sticking together during times of addiction to come through on the other side much stronger and much healthier. So, as I share tonight, I hope you go away with just one or two things that you can take back to your facility or take back to your home that will light a fire and let you maybe get in that big book and study a little bit more. I've been so grateful for the people I've had as mentors through the years. When I came in, oh my goodness. See, I was born in Winder, down in Barrett County. Remember Winder? Back in 1938. Hell, that was before half of y'all born, you know. And the we still shot marbles out in the yard. I don't know about y'all. We played sock ball. We couldn't afford to buy a ball. We made balls out of socks and cut a limb off a tree and used that for a bat, you know. So I came up to her. There were 10 kids in the family, 5 boys, 5 girls. My father was James Curtis Chester. My mother was Ora Mary Chester, all from South Georgia. Moved north, you know, during the Depression. And that's where I was born, up around Winder. Moved to Atlanta when I was 4 years old. World War II broke out. Most of y'all won't remember that. A lot of you do. But my father and mother went to work at Candler Warehouse on Stitt Avenue. This was back in 1942. And they started packaging war material that was shipped overseas. This would be uniforms that the men wore, the pants, the helmets, whatever they needed. They packed it right there and shipped it over to the Army base there in Atlanta. They were from there shipped on out. So, but we lived on the little street called Stitt Avenue. What are y'all laughing about? Highway 41. That's the busiest damn street in Atlanta, wasn't it? Back in the 40s, it was the busiest street in the world, but we had a lot of fun on that street. We had a china berry tree out in the front yard. We'd get a lady's pocketbook, tie a rope to it, and run it out in the street, climb a tree. They'd come along in the old car, and they'd see that pocketbook, they'd jump out of the car. Yeah, we'd snatch it, here we go. They'd chase that faggot up the tree. They'd swear to God that it was going to kill us. But anyway, we had a hell of a time. We just had a ball there. But how we lived through that, I have no idea. I went to Lee Street Grammar School, and about the biggest mess I got into there, I got to, you know what a student patrol is? That's when they give you, you know, white belt looking thing and put a badge on it and put you at a corner to assist the other kids in getting across the street safely. What do you call it?
Cross guard.
Yeah, cross guard. So anyhow, I remember doing that and then playing ball there, and then we went up to Washington, D.C. in the 7th grade. Made a trip up there to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the White House and some other places. Had a great time. But when I graduated from grammar school, I lost my identity because the students that I went to school with, most of them went on to Brown High School. I lived over in a foreign country on Stitt Avenue, and I went to a new school called Sylvan Hills High School on Sylvan Hills Road. So y'all know all about that problem. My dad was a carpenter, never made much more than minimum wage with 10 children. So the children had to work a lot. And I was one of the children, so I had to work. And my first job was, I had a wagon. I went up to West End and loaded groceries at my old Piggly Wiggly. Right down West End. Put a couple of sacks of groceries, take it out, maybe go up a couple of steps, a flight of stairs, get a nickel, come on back, do it all day, maybe go home with 50 cents. But that was big money. Plus kids. Sylvan Hills High School was a different ball game. I was lost for a couple of years. Still worked. Got a job at the a grocery store. Produce department. But I was shooting basketball out on the dirt track outside of Sylvan High one day. And there was a coach that turned out to be a great coach. His name was Ozzie Waterwitch. Walked up to me one day and said, I want you to play basketball. I said, there's no way I can play basketball. I'm having to work for a living. I said, no, you got some potential. I need you on our team. I said, what can I do? I said, you'd have to talk to my dad. He came over that night, talked to my dad. My dad agreed to it. I started going under his tutelage, and he taught me the game of basketball. I was raw, and I could shoot, I could guard, my way of doing things, but it was an individual thing. It wasn't a team play. And Augie took me and put me in a team situation and taught me. So I ended up playing the game as Baby Bear. That's what they call me. And Gerald Hawkins, we call him King Bear. We still talk. He lives down in Orlando, Florida. We still talk all the time. On Facebook and by phone, and we'll have our 65th high school graduation this coming October. And really looking forward to it. But anyway, I got busy playing basketball, and that really turned my life upside down. And it brought out something in me that I always wanted, and that was to be somebody. Always wanted to be somebody, you know. I always felt like, you know, I had two sisters above me, a sister below me. I had four mothers, and I didn't feel too comfortable. And if I didn't do it right, I heard about it, you know. So playing basketball, we did great until the senior year. We ended up going to Savannah, Georgia. And we played a team down there called Benedict High School. And we were picked to lose by 20. We won that ball game. Next thing you know, we down at Savannah Beach. Now, we in February. Now, it's cold. We on Savannah Beach. Built a great big old bonfire. And I don't know where all this booze came from. But some of the other students had driven down from Atlanta to be, you know, share force and all. They brought the booze, and we had us a party out there on the beach that night. We celebrated the victory, but more than that, we wanted to have a good time. All I can remember is after I got really good and drunk, to do the part, I had to go into the ocean buck naked. And it was cold as hell. Oh my God, it was cold. And I came back, and I reached around that fire, and I just wanted to pull it up around me, you know. I was just shivering. And then my lights went out. That's all I remember. I'm just a guy. The next thing you know, I mean, we're talking the next morning. In other words, I went into a blackout. Next morning, I woke up, and my room looked like hell. Really. Looked like a madman had been there. I mean, there's pillars strewn everywhere, and there's... If y'all ever dealt with a drunk, a wet drunk, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to get into all the gory detail. But if you've ever dealt with a wet drunk, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We paid the price. In addition to that, they checked off our luggage, and everybody had loaded up a couple extra towels. They call it feeding or stealing, I guess, but we thought it was fun. So when we got it back, oh, Ozzy Water, which he nearly killed us running wind sprints. But a couple other things. Top team chosen that year. Pretty good grades. Went down to, it was called Georgia Teachers College that year. Because before they started calling it Georgia Southern. And I went down to try it for a scholarship. Didn't work out. But what did work out, later in life, one of my sons graduated from back then. He went from Georgia Teachers to Georgia Southern. Now, he graduated from there back when Wally Butts was the head coach of football. So, that worked out. Anyway, I got busy after high school and got busy working, selling insurance. That didn't work out too good. I got into construction, elevator construction. Went down to a place called Tampa, Florida, and that's where I learned to drink a little liquor. I sipped on a little moonshine liquor and drank a little beer. Never, nothing serious, nothing. Living with my sister, living with my brother-in-law, working with him in the elevator. He was an elevator contractor, construction man. Played softball with the city of Tampa down there. How the hell was it? It was just a great time down there. Great year, but I drank, but it was social. You know, it was just funny games. Came back and I got into the chemical business. And I sold chemicals up and down through Atlanta, then went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there we started. Before that, we started raising children. By the time I was 24, I had a brick house out on the off Browns Bridge Road out in the south end of town. I had two children born there, and then another child born just before we left to go to Chattanooga, and then from Chattanooga, I had a child born in Chattanooga, so I had three boys and a girl. So I'm just boring the hell out of y'all. Y'all have three people sleeping already. That's good. I like it. That takes the pressure off me. But anyhow, I'm going to tell you something. Up in Chattanooga, I had asthma all my life, okay? But up there, I stayed sick. That was a dirty city back then. They cleaned it up now. They got rid of all those coal towers and coal smoke and all that jazz. Beautiful city today. But back then, you could cross over Missionary Ridge and look down into the city, and it was just like a cloak of black clouds laying on top of the city. That's where I worked, and that's stage six. Transferred to Macon, Georgia, and that's where we really raised our children. Had a good time. I coached a lot of basketball, a lot of football, a lot of baseball. We won a lot of tournaments. We won a lot of trophies. But through it all, I took after the games and all, I'd have my relaxation. I don't know, somewhere, and I can't put a fingertip on it, but somewhere along the line, that booze started to do some stuff to me that I couldn't do with exercise or food or fellowship. It filled a hole in my heart, soul, and to this day I can't explain it. All I know is that when I crossed that line into alcoholism, I wanted more. I see you sitting at the table drinking, and you get that much in your glass, and I'm wondering, you must be one crazy rascal. What's wrong with you? Why don't you drink that liquor? Because I was drinking mine, and somebody, then I started hiding liquor. Y'all ever hiding the liquor? Taking drinks before you through. I was going to a party one time in the New Year's Eve party. Never will forget it. Some great friends of ours were raised our kids with them right across the street. They had moved over to Warner Robins. We're going to a New Year's Eve party. I'd heard about this procedure. You could drink a little olive oil before you go out. Line your stomach really good with olive oil. And you could take three or four shots of that J.W. Dan 100 proof and chase with hot beer. And you could just be the life of the party. That was the life of the party, all right. I stopped on the way over there, raining like hell. And I stopped over there and I bought some gas on the pretense, buying gas, opened the trunk, and took another slug of that stuff. I got to the party. I walked in, and I remember, meeting a few people, and some of them ended up being pretty good customers down the road. But somewhere along the line, my lights went out. Click. Now, all I can tell you is what they say, because I don't remember this, okay? All they've got your war stories, and all of them are funny. But this in turn is serious, okay? I made my wife mad as hell. I went out the back door, apparently, drunk as a student, and somewhere along the line passed out on the patio. And all I can remember, it sounded way off, like a train coming from way. And I heard a door open. And I heard somebody say, "Where is he?" "I don't know, he came this way." "And there he is." "You know, it's sleeting out here. Maybe we need to get him in the house." "No, just let the sumbitch lay there and die." Now I'm hearing this, and it sounds like it's way out yonder. I don't know about y'all, but have you ever been that drunk? It's way out there. I'm hearing this, and I'm thinking to myself, "Oh, shit. What have I got to do?" Now, keep in mind, I'm already, oh, Lord, in trouble, deep trouble. You know what my thought was? sick man, I have got to get up from this place, and I got to get in that house, and I got to straighten that woman out. So she is out of control. True story. All I remember is going back in that house. I remember going to the bathroom. I remember grabbing a towel. And that's all I remember. But they say I had the grandest time dancing and having a good time. And they claim I danced on top of the table. I have no recollection. Try to do a strip. I don't remember all that shit. All I can tell you, it was embarrassment to my wife. And oh my God. So yes. It gets kind of cold around your house, kind of like not having a furnace when you do that to your wife. Well, I tell you what, it's just tough for a while. Well, that happened, and then that same winter, I got into wearing a wig. And you guys that wear a wig? That's pretty cool. What you do, you shave this top part, and you put a piece of tape right here, and a piece of tape here, and a piece of tape here. These ladies know about this. And you put that wig down and tighten it up and just kind of press it down. And then you get some of the hairspray and and then you kind of comb it, you know, really make it damn look. And you look in the mirror and you wink. Oh, you're so pretty. Put on that jacket and get that blue tie and yellow tie. And I'm off to make my mark. My wife, she's gone to Mercy University where she works. And kids gone to school, and I'm going to go sell some chemicals and really pay these bills, and I almost got there. That LTD, it turned in a driveway, and I couldn't stop it. But liquor store, and I went there, got it, JWD and 100 proof, and here I go again. At that point, I became not only a drunk, but what we call a wandering in generality. If you drove and drunk like I did, you know what I'm talking about. You get drunk, just drive all over the damn county. You wake up, don't know where the hell you are. But if you drive far enough, you figure it out. I came by here an hour ago. Which way did I go? You know, I was doing some Boy Scout work one time. We was up in the mountains. I took these 8 really super scouts up there. To some super training in the wintertime. They bought me a hat. One side said, well, up on the top it said, I am their leader. And on each side it said, which way did he go? And that's the way I felt that day. Which way did I go? I had no idea which way I was going. But I would do that, and then, you know, I'd try to, call in, run in, entertain him, a customer, blah, 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 tell that lie. I'd be home after, you know, I became at Warner General. Warner General talks like this. I'll be there for a while. It's not, I'll be there at 6. It's after a while. When you coming over? Maybe tomorrow. That's Warner General. How you deal with people like that? And I was one of them, you know. I know I drove my wife insane. She had me. Totally insane. So I survived that little deal. But I drive around the country, stop by these old churches in the back, drink, hide out. One day I ended up at the Holiday Inn on Riverside Drive. It was wintertime, and I was in a hunting club. I don't know. Did y'all ever wear one of these jumpsuits? I was told it a...
Coveralls.
What? No, it's a suit. It's one fabric that lines all the way. What do you call those suits?
Leisure
suit. Well, some of the old timers know what I'm talking about. They had the big old lapel, you know, and you get your green jacket and make it. I guess it's called leisure suit. All I know is when I climbed that tree, I don't remember climbing it. I drank my liquor down at all the end. And the girls come in laughing and cutting up. And they got to giggling, talking about this beautiful bar down the street and about 4 or 5 blocks away. I went down there and, oh my God, they were crazy down there. So I figured I'd straighten out, got in my car, and I took off to deer camp. And that's all I remember. When I woke up, let me tell you something. I had a 30-06 in my hand. I had this leisure suit. It looked like every piece on that suit had been plucked. Well, you pull it. And I looked down, and I looked up, and the wind was blowing. And that old tree went to rocking. And I laid the gun in my lap, and I reached back and get the tree behind me like this. And then I looked at my gun, and I said, oh, my God, if that gun falls, I'm a dead man. So I reached and get my gun again. I rode that storm out, and I made it home. I have no idea. I mean, I'm driving home. Blackout drinking. February 21, 1978. Cold day. Same scenario. Get up, get dressed, take that shower, and scrub that strong soap, and try to get that stench out of your skin. Trying to convince yourself I'm going to make a sales call, make a little money. Thank God I had loyal customers that would call the orders in, you know. We never missed a meal during all this time. I don't know how that happened. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. But anyway, I scrubbed down really, really clean that morning. I went out, did my thing. I got in that, I used to call it LSD. But it was an LTD, station wagon. I mean, one of them, just long as you had that window open. Had the wood on the side of it. I hauled kids all over the place, that thing. Drunk as hell. 10 kids in the back. Here we go. I sat out that Tobosaki Lake and I drank, pass out, come to cold. Oh my God, I was cold, shivering. Take up the car, warm the car, warm back up, take a couple of slugs, pass back out. I did that, late that afternoon. I woke up and I said the magic word. I said, God, help me. God, help me. I ended up going to the nearest dump and I dumped whatever I had left in the car. I went home and I took those clothes off, you know, body in that wig sideways, you know. Sweating profusely, your hands are shaking. I called Alcoholics Anonymous in Macon, Georgia, and they tell me where a meeting is on College Street. Starts at 8 o'clock, they said, and I said, I'll do my best to be there. I got dressed, put that wig back on, another wig. Had to have at least four of them because three of them smell bad all the time. Have to wash them. Have to wash them out. Yeah. But I went on to the meeting, and I drove around that meeting three or four times, and I swear to God, I didn't see anybody meeting. I saw the light at the church. But it was a street that had absolutely no home street parking. But my brain couldn't figure that one out. I couldn't figure out where the people at. Why aren't they here? Finally, I parked down the street, went up and climbed the steps of the church, the light. There's a guy with a white collar, looked at me, pointed at the door, and he said, open it. You ever seen a church that's got a door that's round at the top, huge door? It's that thick. Beautiful, beautiful. Door. He opened that door real slow and he says, you must be looking for AA. I have no idea how he knew. I'm sitting, I'm sweating. My wig is sideways. I'm sweating. I'm shivering. You must be looking for AA. I said, yes, I am. He said, come on in. My name is John and I'm an alcoholic. He took me down to my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, that afternoon I was rescued by God at Lake Tobosaki. And when John walked me down the hall and down those 12 steps into a room, and some of the old timers here will remember, when you open the door, there will be a cloud of smoke just billow out. These young people, hell, you'd think the place is on fire now, y'all. Oh, yeah, I get it. Where the hell are y'all going? The place is on fire. But some of those, I remember that. I swear to God, it was so thick you couldn't see across the room. Guy come to the door, his name was, what was his name? His last name was Chester. His first name was Roland. Some of the old timers said it was used to go down to the central committee down there to make him, used to know him. He's dead now. He reached, had white hair, blue eyes. He looked at me and he said, "I'm Roland and I'm an alcoholic." I said, "I'm Sam. I don't know what the hell I am." He said, "You mind if I hug you?" And I said, "No, sir." And he took me in his arms. I'm going to tell you something. That's powerful. It's powerful stuff. I've been going home and getting in my easy chair, and the only thing that came close to touching me was my daughter. She'd come by and put her hand on my head like that and say, "Good night, Daddy," for months. She's my resident nurse now. She trains people at the Johns Creek Hospital, operating room. If it hadn't been for her, I'd have gotten sober. She loved her daddy. She's fighting her own demons now. She's got a son that's in the room in treatment. It will work out one way or the other. It's going to work out one way or the other. It's going to work out. It's just third treatment facility. You never know at what point someone is going to make an impact in your life that's going to turn the tide from "I don't have any hope" to all of a sudden you have hope. If it ever happens to you, turn a page down. It's the most important thing you'll ever experience in your life. Hope. When I came to this program, I didn't have it. I came here hopeless, beaten, broke, on the run from reality. IRS trying to get a hold of me. Oh, y'all stop that laughing now, because I know y'all been there, hadn't you? That damn IRS will tell you. They'll tell you. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. 7 years, bam. They want their money. How many 2 days after I came to the program? 3 days in the first, your newcomers, first night, before you leave this building, you get 3 phone numbers, maybe 5. If you're slow, get you 10. But you're going to need a phone number. Sooner or later, you're going to need one. 3 days into this program, my wife told me before I went to bed the night before. See, I'd get up early and just leave out. First 3 days, I stayed in the library studying, reading a big book. But by the way, your boss came by looking for you today. I said, "I'll talk to him tomorrow." Yeah, right. This morning he left. The phone rang. I did not answer the phone. 20 minutes later, a car pulls up. It's him. I go hide in the closet. That's normal shit for somebody coming off booze, you know, just shaking and struggling. And you talk about terror and bewilderment, and you talk about that thing that the four horsemen. You hang with this liquor, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's there, brother. This drives you totally insane. Paranoid? Oh my God. He left, and a big old black shepherd stopped barking. My heart stopped pounding in a few minutes. And I remembered the phone number. I went and called Dick P. Turned out he was a customer of mine. Hospital there. I said, "Dick, I need to talk to you." He said, "What do you need to talk about?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Are you drinking?" I said, "No, sir." I said, "But I want to." He said, "No." He said, "What's your address?" He said, "I'll be there in 20 minutes. He lived up off Corbin. He was there in less than 20 minutes in his house coat and his night clothes. "Where's your coffee pot?" I had to think about that. I've been drinking liquor a long time. You have a coffee pot, you make coffee. Have you ever seen a real drunk man? He don't have any hearing. The phone rang. I didn't answer the phone. Rang, rang. He said, "Do you hear that phone ringing?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, that's the damn thing." I said, "That's my boss. He wants to fire me." He said, "Well, if he's going to fire you, he's going to fire you. So what's the big deal? Tell that SOB to come over here and do what he's got to do." Hello. Come over here and do what you got to do. Swear to God. He come over. Dick let him in. Gave him a cup of coffee. Sat around the big table. Went over the books. Gave him the books. I signed off. I, Sam Chester, resigned as of this day. Click it, click, click it, click. Whew. They left. Dick left. I sat there at that table, very distraught. I needed that job. After 13 years of not working, I was getting paid. If I took care of that job, I'd have been a rich man today. But I needed my job. So I sat there and I wept for a while, and then I got up that evening. I went to a meeting, and Roland took me to meetings all over town. How much time have I got? 5 minutes? 5 more minutes? Where do we go from here? We went all over town, made a lot of meetings, helped build a couple of clubhouses, then make them. Got sober. First job back. Bill 8 distributors selling beer. I wasn't selling nothing. I was unloading trucks and sweeping up rotten beer off the ground. Loading trucks. I did that for like 2 months. And walked down one day and he threw the keys at me. He said, "Listen, go fill that truck up and go sell some beer." He said, "You're a salesman, aren't you?" I lied. I said, "Yeah, hell yeah, I am." Truckload of beer, free keys, nice man, full of gas. Are you kidding? You got to be crazy. Seriously, though, I went around town and I put out those little dolies. Is that what you call them? Those dolies sit on the table. The things, little casters, coasters, you call them. I advertised that beer, and it was all imported beer. Billy beer, you remember Billy beer? Sold a lot of Billy beer. Oh, I know. But I didn't get to play that game, see? By then I quit drinking. But I sold a mess of it. Then we ended up going to Helen and we did the Oktoberfest. That was our big day, you know, big month. Took the big truck up there, I got a motel room, and I went out and got these cattle watering metal. You've seen them.
Trough,
big as this table, and, you know, fill it up with ice and put your beer in there. Put them out all over town. We sold a lot of beer. Got caught up on the bills. I'll tell you something else. Since I've gone to work in this company, in the A, my company's AA today. My boss is God, okay? Since I've been in this company, I haven't missed a payment. Nowhere. That's not bragging. I'm just telling you what God can do for me, what I couldn't do for myself. Well, I used to scramble around and go meet to try to find the postman to get my check. Didn't know if I was going to get one or not because that didn't work. Anyhow, we did doctor. I'm sitting at the table one day and I get this call. "Sam, I'm thinking quick and I'm with so-and-so company and I'd really like to talk to you about a job. It's a management job in the chemical business. It's a brand new startup program. You got to pull this off someday. It's funny. Stick out your chest and say, 'I got a job.'" "I got a job. Selling beer." You know what I'm saying? I caught myself. He said, "No, I'm serious. I want to talk to you about this." So I met Farrell, and we agreed, and 19 years later, I retired with Georgia Pacific. Nice retirement check, the whole nine yards. All right, here, along the way, a lot of stuff happened. I went through a divorce. I went through another divorce. I got tired of them dodging cups and plates. Sick-ass women. I'm sober, you know what I'm saying? And then I'm back from first wife. We've been together now 14 years. And I go on, and look, it's awful hard to put 38 years of sobriety in one hour, okay? All I can tell you is I trust that somewhere along the road of sobriety, as we trudge the road of our hepatitis, that we'll meet somewhere along the way. There's three things you need to make a list of. If you've never been to an international conference, put it on your list. International AA. I've been to three out of the country. Super. If you've never fished in another country, if you're a fisherman, put it on your list. I'd like to fish in another country. End up going to Brazil, fishing with those peacock bass. That's a trip. Watch your kids graduate from school. Watch them graduate from college. Watch your grandkids be born. I would experience none of this if I'd kept drinking. None of it. I've had some sad times in this program. I've had people I sponsor die. I got a dear friend right now, Dick W., who's at the point of death, one of my dearest friends. Big, big, and around this part of the country for years. Y'all say a prayer for him tonight. But see, life keeps coming. Happiness, sadness, joy. It keeps coming, but in all of it, what we need to do is remember one thing. God could and would if he was sought. How do you seek him? Take step number one. That's the problem. Powerless of alcohol, the lives of men. Then take the next 11 steps, and that's the solution. This is not you don't have to be a genius to figure this thing out. You just got to stop doing it your way and do it AA way, like I did. Do it AA way. Try it for a year. I mean, what's wrong with staying sober for a year? Try for a year, make all your meetings, get in a group, help clean up the place, get in the program. Don't get around the program. Be part of AA. Don't be a part, be part of. And God bless you, and God has blessed me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for that, Sam. We all really enjoyed it.
Girl for me. Seems like everyone. every pill from 80.